The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
Welcome, you're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. That guy over there, well, that's my own version of Yeti. It's Tim Dennis. Hey, Tim.
Hi.
How you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good, man. Another weekend gone by just too GD quick for my taste, but I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
We've had a good run, good week, good crazy stories yesterday. I got a great guest coming up today. And listen, I've got to address listeners with something real quickly here. I'm doing my best from the road to juggle about 1,800 balls. For those of you that are not familiar, I'm out filming a brand new TV program. I don't know if I'm at liberty to say what network or anything, so I'll be careful right now. But I'm filming a new TV program that will begin airing sometime around September. And I'm on every episode of this new series. And I'm out on the road filming. I'm doing Midnight in the Desert from the road. I'm doing our show from the road. And I don't have the time to write, clean up and produce the and record the episodes of Theater of the Mind. So while I'm on the road, we're going to just give you some of our favorite replays of Theater of the Mind. And when I'm back in, we'll give you brand new episodes. Does that sound fair, Tim?
Yeah, that's fair.
I love working on them. I love your guys' stories. And that might give us a little time to bank some more stories as well. If you'd like one of your stories featured on Theater of the Mind, just write me your paranormal encounter. And if you can write it as a narrative, you hear how they sound. If you can write it as a narrative, give us a little bit more than just, yeah, I seen a Bigfoot once when I was 12. Give us a little bit more of the story. Tell us what it was like. Crisp autumn air, was the sound of twigs snapping, birds chirping, frogs having sex, whatever you can come up with. We just more detail, the better Tim can make it sound. And we will share your encounters here on the show. We'll also continue to take your phone calls. We'd love to hear more from you. And we're getting more calls, which is great. So if you are unfamiliar with our phone number, then I don't know what's wrong with you. I repeat it all the time. Our Voices from Beyond voicemail is 651-300-4977. 651-300-4977. You can call and leave us your paranormal encounters, or you can just call and leave us a message. We may not play it on the upcoming episode if it's just a message, but if you want to reach out and talk to Tim and tell him how sexy his voice is and how he helps you to go to sleep every night, or if you want to call in and leave your favorite cookie recipe, or if you want to call in with the winning lottery numbers for Tim and I, or if you just want to call in and sexually harass Tim,
please.
That's the number to call. 651-300-4977. That's our Voices from Beyond voicemail. I'd give you Tim's number, which is 612.
The Voices from Beyond line is fine. I was just going to give them
your number so they know not to call that one.
Right. No, but Tim, let's not confuse people with numbers. Let's just give them the one number. And that way it's clear where they can call.
All right. Well, if we're going to give him one number, let's give him the direct one, which is write to Tim at 612.
No, Dave. The voice is from Beyond Line. It's fine. I'd rather.
Oh, are you sure?
It's a test run. You know, just leave your number on that voice is from Beyond. I kind of want to hear your voice first, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. Oh, so you're testing them.
Yeah, yeah.
This is kind of like a Tinder of voices for you.
Sure. Yeah.
So if you like their voice, then maybe you'll let me give the phone number out on the air later. I got you.
No.
Sorry, folks. I keep trying. He's a jerk. He refuses to let you have his phone number and his address so you can stop by at any time.
Yeah.
Day or night.
Exactly.
That's Tim.
Yeah.
I've tried for years, folks. He's just a jerk. He doesn't care about you the
it's
way
not
I
that
do.
That I'm a jerk. It's you know.
No, you're kind of a jerk when you refuse to let your fan base, the people that love you, the people that like to wear your skin like an apron, Tim.
Yeah, see,
when you refuse
it.
To give them your phone number and address, I think that's just kind of being a jerk.
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at. I don't want people wearing my skin. That's
Tim. It's all with love and affection. Why do you have to make a dark thing out of it?
Well, it is a little dark.
I don't want to live in a world where I don't think that there's some fan out there that wants to eat soup out of my skull, Tim. I just want to believe in my own mind that that's a sign of love and compassion,
that they
want to have that piece of them.
That is
what?
That is not love.
You think I've been doing too many years of True Crime Tuesday?
I think maybe we need to get you some therapy, buddy.
Yeah.
Therapy.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll consider that. Let's get started. Listen, I've got an interesting show lined up today, Tim.
Okay.
I've told this story before. I'm going to tell it again briefly. I was a young kid. And again, it's between 10 and 12. I mean, I'm 52 years old almost. And, you know, pinpointing exact dates is not easy for me anymore. But I know it was between the ages of about 10 and 12. I used to go to Foley, Alabama every year for Thanksgiving to celebrate with our family, my dad's side of the family. And my grandparents own 40 acres of property in Alabama. And I'm not trying to brag, you know, just letting you know, we own 40 acres. It was maybe 10 of it was workable. The rest of it was just overgrown wild preserve, basically.
That's a lot of land, though.
Yeah, a lot of land.
Yeah.
And we had a beautiful fishing pond, and we'd go down there. And while you're fishing, you would hear crunching and walking around in the woods. And I never really thought it's just wildlife, right? I mean, we're in Alabama. There's probably alligators walking around out there. You know, there's probably bear, deer, moose, elk, you know, I don't know, Canadian beavers. I'm not sure what's in Alabama. I'm not an outside guy.
Yeah.
It could be very bulky squirrels.
Yeah.
But one day, my cousin and I, Rob, we're down there fishing at the pond, and we hear loud walking towards the pond, and we're kind of looking at each other, and it's like, boy, that's really loud. Well, maybe it's one of our dads. Our dads like to go out hunting in the woods, but this sounded really loud, and it was definitely bipedal. It wasn't the, you know, when you hear a dog or something four-legged, it's kind of at that, you know, that kind of multi-layered sound to it. This was definitely weird. It's uncanny how I almost bring you there with those sound effects, isn't it?
Really is. Yeah. No need for me to produce anything, really.
I know. Yeah. Right. I'm right there. When suddenly we notice at the back of the pond, now the pond's maybe a good 60, 70, 80 yards across, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's overgrown thick wild bushes and stuff back there. All of a sudden we see a bush start to shake a little. And then over the top of this tall bush comes this furry paw, this hand, and I refer to it as a furry paw because it was more like Chewbacca's hand. You know how he's, you know, he's got that hair that comes up over the top of his fingers.
Yeah, yeah,
right. That's just pushes down the top of the bush, and it pushes it down. So now we can see from the top of its head to just under its nose, and there is this large, kind of dark haired, almost dark and gray matted hair figure staring at the two of us. And it's one of those moments where you just kind of stare at each other in disbelief. And then I slowly turn to my cousin and look at him. He looks at me. We look back at this thing staring at us. And then we Scooby-Doo it right back up to the house, right? Legs are spinning in the air. Boom, we're off. We go running in, half expecting maybe we're going to get up there and find out our dads are out there somewhere and they're just jerking with us. Because our dads were known for being jokesters. We get up to the house. Everybody's there. Every family member is accounted for. We're telling them what happened. my dad, my uncle, my grandfather all grab their shotguns and go out there. They don't know. Is it some giant, homeless guy living out in the woods? That's good eating that night, Tim.
Oh,
right.
Sure,
I mean, yeah. We're a close family. We're a hunting family. Homeless, they're tasty. Not true. Tim, we hardly ever ate the homeless. Anyway.
You make a stew out of them that lasts for days. I mean,
right. Yeah. They run out there to check and they find nothing. Right. This thing is hightailed it. But my grandmother would talk about things like that. They believed that they would see UFOs over their property. And they, these are old school Polish people, right? My mm-hmm. stepdad and the very Chicago Polish and his parents are very much like that. And it had retired down to Alabama. But they would talk about these things. And it was very real to them what was going on. So that was kind of my experience. I can't say it was a Bigfoot because I wasn't close enough, but it was huge. And these bushes, the top of these bushes had to be a good 7-8 feet tall. Hmm. And this hand just came up over the top and pushed him down. And it stared at us. And it didn't look, and I even in today, I'm thinking back, okay, could it have been a wild-haired African-American homeless person or somebody back there? Because the face was deep inset and it was darker. Right.
Okay.
But this hair was kind of a darker, like a darkish black and gray. But I don't remember getting any feel of it being human quality, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, you're saying, but Dave, there's a hairy hand. Not many people have hairy hands. Right. But were they wearing a glove? Were they? I don't know. I can't tell you specifically, but I can tell you that it was big. It was out there and it didn't look human. But it did have darker features. And that's why, you start to review these stories in your mind. And, I want to try to make sense of it. So I know I've tried to layer the fact that maybe it was human. Maybe it was human. And that over time. I talked to my cousin at my mom's funeral and asked him. I said, do you remember this? And at first he kind of looked and goes, no. And then I said, remember, because then the bush came down and we saw it. And then he's like, yeah. And he's about 2 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
But he remembers the fear. That's what kicked back in his memory. Yeah. We took off running to the house. I'm like, yeah. So we had this. So I'm excited to talk to our guest. And, it's taken me a while to get there, and I apologize. But I wanted to share that story because this is the blurb that I read. The book is called Footnotes, Experiences with Sasquatch from 2014 to 2018. Footnotes explores the experiences of, first, a woman who lives in a remote area of Alabama.
Hmm.
When the author is asked to help with the unnerving intrusion of these animals into her life, an extended adventure begins involving both women and then with the author on her own. So, boy, a tie to Alabama and a Bigfoot encounter. That's the first I've heard. As a matter of fact, I get a lot of emails from people in Alabama telling me, I live in Alabama. I live near Foley. I've never even heard that there was Bigfoot in this area. So I've thought maybe I've lost my mind. But joining us now is Susan Barron. She's a retired science and English teacher. Susan has worked on sightings and other reports of Sasquatch for around 16 years. She's with us today. Susan, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. You're so funny.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I'm enjoying you.
Oh, I appreciate that. Can you tell me, how close are you to Foley, Alabama?
I'm trying to think where Foley is. Can you give me a heads up? Is it near Montgomery?
It's definitely in Alabama. I am geographically challenged. It might be somewhere between Portugal and Greece, but definitely in the confines of Alabama. It's near Pensacola, Florida, because I remember that was a very close drive. That's where my aunt lives, and that was no more than like a 30 or 40-minute drive. I want to say it's close to Mobile.
I also want to say
it was a magical place filled with unicorns, but you can't believe everything I say. So I'm horrible at geography, and literally I stopped going there 35 years ago. So I don't have many memories of the exact place, but it was a great, great place to grow up and go visit from. I think it was like about 4 years old when we started going. We probably stopped when I was around 15.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Oh, you were definitely down there near Pensacola. I see exactly where you are. You were in the, Panhandle, they call it, of Florida. Right there is the line between Alabama and Pensacola and Florida. Okay, yeah. Well, you know what? You saw a Bigfoot.
See,
you don't need to worry about it anymore. You saw one.
See, I'm only worried because Tim is so judgy-wudgy. You know, I say I saw Bigfoot, and he just rolls his eyes at me. So I might, it makes me question everything, everything.
Oh, I know.
Well, yeah. Why are you blaming it on me?
I've got to have a scapegoat, Tim, and the best one to be that.
All right.
So, Susan, talk to me about your experience, 2004 to 2018. Before 2004, Susan, did the concept or idea of Bigfoot ever play in your mind or in your life?
Well, from 2002 to 2004, I was hot on the trail with a group and doing reports. But before that, no. I was a kid, I loved hidden things, hidden animals. And the Loch Ness Monster was my favorite and the one I did the most work on when I was in college. But after that, no, it was too much for me. I just looked at that and I said, no, I'm not going to buy that. But after I came here to Huntsville, that's when it started. I saw the Patterson-Gimlin film and I got it on the internet and I looked at it over and over and over again that night. And I said, how can anybody not think this is a real animal? So that got me started.
All right. When you say got you started, did you try to find like a meetup group for Bigfoot enthusiasts? How do you get started?
Well, I decided to try to join one of the groups and they let me in and I got to look at the Alabama reports and whoo-wee. You say that.
Hey, simmer down with that language, lady. This is a family show.
I tell you what, those reports, there were so, so many of them. And like you say, sometimes it was just, I saw a Bigfoot cross the road in front of my car. And not helpful, you know, that's just right. Not, but I really got lots of reports that were helpful. And they hadn't been handled in quite a few years, apparently, because there were, I don't know, there were over 100 or something of the things. And
Can I ask you this? In reviewing those reports, and please take no offense by this, but, I mean, how many of them were Bubba Joe in his pickup truck on the way home from the bar? And how many of them were, you know, Dr. Theobald Richard, who was a well-known and practicing psychiatrist or brain surgeon? Did you have many, you know, swings in the type of experiences, cops, moms, dads, you know, attorneys, pool cleaners? I mean, is it a wide swath of life that has experienced this, or was it usually the drunkards on their way home from the pub that night?
No, I mean, anything that smacked of drunkards or anything that smacked of just the usual. And like I said in the book, I'm a teacher and I've been listening to little children tell bad lies for a long time. So I could kind of figure who was just, you know, not wanting to tell the truth in these things.
Right.
So I could throw those out. And I'd say that was roughly probably the same as the population, probably 10% of people. You know, are liars, I guess. I don't know. That's my feeling.
Oh, you're lucky. If in your life only 10% of the people you know are liars, you're doing pretty well. I think I'm on the other scale. I know the other 90%.
Okay. This is hilarious. Yeah. Well, I mean, that might be a conservative estimate, right? But I threw those out. But see, the others were, yes, mainly from people who lived in rural areas. They were country people. And sometimes it was so difficult to decipher what they had written because they were not at all educated. So I got stuff from people deep in the woods. But there was a good number, I would say, maybe let's go to the 10%, the bell curve 10%, of people who were educated who had seen them. So it just varied. But mostly I would say, maybe Bubba, yeah.
And I don't want people to think that I'm coming down on the unwashed, uneducated masses. I mean, that those are just as important to hear from. But, you know, I just know there's enough skeptics that listen to the show that they're going to roll their eyes. Oh, yeah. Alabama people driving around seeing Bigfoot. Sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's what I've encountered. And that's what I've dealt with for so many years. People just don't believe it just from the get go and nothing can change their minds. So, but yeah, this is, you're going to find this animal in deep woods. And the people that you're going to find who encounter this animal live in the deep woods. or hunt in the deep woods, but their experiences are transitory. The ones who live in the deep woods may even hear it occasionally or be aware of it more than other people. So it's just a condition of the animal's habitat that those people are going to be the ones you run into.
And when they're running into this creature, is it more morning, afternoon, evening? Are they out hunting? Are they out, you know, picking berries? What is the usual encounter like?
The usual encounter, of course, is let's just don't talk about those that just say Bigfoot crossing the road in front of the car. We won't even deal with those, all right? But the usual encounter is in those, I love this word, so I'm going to use it. I'm going to show off the crepuscular hours of sunrise and sunset.
Uh-oh, somebody's good at Scrabble.
Look it up. these are the hours in which there might be enough light that they could actually see movement. Otherwise, this animal's too smart to be seen. At those hours, he goes out and hunts or socializes or whatever he does, comes back in the morning when the sun's going down. I mean, coming up, hopefully. So those are the hours that people are most likely to see him. Now, they hear him throughout the night. He's very active with vocal calls, and he makes a lot of noise if he's comfortable. So
we've actually got some of that audio now from late nights in Alabama. Bigfoot calls.
Really?
Tim, do you have that audio ready?
As a matter of fact, I do. Here we go.
Bubba! Hey, Bubba! Where's that still at, Bubba?
Wow, that's compelling evidence, Tim. I don't care who you are. That is pretty compelling evidence.
It really is.
I mean, you can understand how they blend in. You know how many emails...
Yeah.
You know how many emails I'm going to get from people that live in Alabama because I'm joking?
Yeah, it's going to be bad because they're going to be offended. Yes, I know.
Everybody's offended nowadays.
But that's okay. I have found that these people are so honest. They are so reliable. And, I mean, there are those that I've met that I thought might want to kill me for being on their property, you know. So I thought, I need to end this quickly and go on, you know, and get in the car and leave. So I have seen that, again, maybe that 5% that are a little homicidal. But the others have been so straight with me, so gracious, and from what I can tell, so truthful. Stories that are good just sound right. You know, those stories that you can count on, there's enough detail, enough strangeness, enough whoa factor that, to me, it's apparent that they're not lying. How could you make it up? I mean, I've heard some things that I can't make that stuff up, you know. For example, there was a call when I took my niece out, which was not the wisest thing I ever did. We sat out all night, and at sunset, it had gotten dark enough that we couldn't see him real well. He has a pattern of coming through this creek and coming up. I know this now. At the time, I didn't. And I heard this crazy 4 times, this loud call. Okay, now I'm going to take the phone away because I'll blow your ears out, all right? He goes, he does a dog bark.
Are you sure that wasn't a sneeze?
At the end.
Maybe it was just a sneeze. He might have allergies.
Sneezing 4 times. Yeah. But Val and I looked at each other and I said, what the heck was that? And always I'm surprised. My first reaction was, what was that? When, Susan, where are you? What time of day is it? It's this animal. So, I mean, I was convinced because of the loudness. He loves to mimic things. You know, you were talking about calling out Bubba. Mm-hmm. Well, this animal has called out, I'm going to use not their real names, has called out Jean's husband's name, Robert. And she yelled out once to the dogs because she could hear them. Jean did, and she said, shut up, to the dogs. And a little bit later from the distance, shut up. just this thing can mimic human sounds and animal sounds. He does a wonderful barred owl, even though it's a little rough, but he does a great barred owl. I finally heard it. So I'm sort of going all over the chart here. You get me back when you want to hear.
I hear he's pretty good at Wayne Newton, too.
Listen, he's got a bass voice. He's got a bass voice, not a tenor.
Well, once in a while from the woods you hear,
Darker Shane, darling, Darker Shane.
Lower that three octaves and you got it.
Yeah, exactly. It sounded more like Marlon Brando trying to do Wayne Newton.
Something well, like but, that.
All right, so you hear this kind of bark and gobble sound. Sounds like a great restaurant title, Tim. Let's open up a hot dog place called the Bark and Gobble.
I like it.
It's true.
And we retire to Florida together, Tim, and become official Florida men.
I like
Stop
it.
By and visit Dave and Tim at the Bark and Gobble. Get your reservations now by calling Tim at 612.
Dave, don't call me directly. We're going to have a phone at the restaurant.
All right. Yeah. All right. So you hear this bark and gobble. Do you see anything that goes along with it, Susan?
That was the night that I saw my first one. Yes, eventually I do, but it takes a long time. He obviously came out and went about his, he didn't go about his business right away. No, that's right. Val said, Susan, I'm hearing something over here. And I couldn't hear a thing that she was hearing. And she got very upset and very nervous. I said, listen, do you want me to shut the window? And she said, oh, God, yes. So I shut the window. Not that, as my husband points out, you think of an animal that could pick up a deer and sling it around and smash it somewhere, can't punch his fist through your car window? And, you know, yeah, well, I guess I can. So after Val heard that and I shut the window, I was sitting with my window open, and the thing went around the back of the car, I think, and approached me from my side. Now, that was thrilling. I heard three heavy, like you were describing, the footprint, the footsteps. Exactly. And about that tempo. He was not in a hurry. He was just moseying his way.
Nobody in Alabama is.
Yeah, they're all moseying. Yeah, right. He's found that out, how to do that. So he was coming up to the car, not in a hurry. He wasn't coming to attack. He was coming to check me out. So three footsteps, and I realized, oh, my God, that is not a human. So I'm trying to get the window shut, and I can't figure out how to do it because my car is new, and I've never figured that out. So finally I said, oh, hell, start the car.
And wait a minute. You figured out how to get it down, but you couldn't figure it. It's the same button. You just have to push it the other way.
Yeah, I was just all screwed up. You know,
you're nervous. Right.
I got scared. So I got the car started, but I heard four more steps before I figured that out. And the window went up, and, of course, I'm using my flashlight trying to see what was it. Of course, he's gone by then, or he's so well hidden. I mean, these guys have the skills to hide. So I was pretty shaken. And then time went on. We got tired. Finally, about 4 a.m., I said, Val, if I'm going to drive back to Huntsville from down here, I've got to get going now. We drove out. I turned right onto the little country road. I checked my rearview mirror on the outside, not the inside, the side mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And there he was. And I was shocked out of my mind. Either he had come back or he had watched us all night. And he was, oh, wow, what a moment. He was floating across the road, floating. He was backlit by what we call the preacher's house down the road, because the preacher has figured out these things are there. And he's got lights like, you know, Las Vegas around his house. So there was enough light from him, his house, to backlight this thing. And he was just floating very eerily. And I looked and I looked.
Now, wait a minute. What do you mean? He was physically off the ground floating?
No,
or
no,
he was just gliding so smoothly as he moved?
Exactly.
You just
said it. It looked like he was floating. Let me put it that way. No, I don't want to, you know, impute any supernatural anything to him, because I deal in facts, you know, what I see and hear. So, yes, it appeared he was floating, but he was gliding. I saw no motion anywhere, no arm motion, no thigh motion. All I saw was a little churning motion of his knees down. And at one point, one foot came up off the ground, completely off the ground, to continue with that motion. But you see, I only had like 3 or 3.5 seconds. And I concentrated like I have never even in Chaucer, I concentrated like I have never concentrated before. And I got it. Dirty, filthy, needed a bath, skinny, but he was a Bigfoot.
All right, you see this. Obviously kind of a thrill to you. Can you say, if you had to guess, height and weight, what would it be?
Okay, height I kind of got. I don't like to exaggerate or even think I'm going to exaggerate, so I'm going to say 6'8". Could have been 7, but 6'8" is what I stay with. His weight, my gosh, he was so thin. 200 pounds, 250 max. He was not heavy like the massive ones. Now, Gene saw one that was truly massive.
Kind of, he was kind of the hipster of the Bigfoot realm. And super tall and skinny. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I don't know whether he was sick or what. I asked my doctor for some human tapeworm medicine because I thought maybe that was what was wrong with him. I was going to slip it in something good so he'd eat it. And the doctor just looked at me like, well, I'm a little heavy, you know. So he looks at me with this peering glance and just ignores me and goes right back to his typing. So I didn't get the tapeworm medicine for this poor thing. But he definitely was thin. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's kind of you to think that the Bigfoot's got tapeworm. You're going to get him medicine and drug him. mental note, Tim, do not accept a drink from Susan Barron if you go out with her. Just don't do
right,
it.
Right, right. Yeah.
I don't know what she's going to slip into your drink. All right. So you've had this experience. How old is your niece at that time?
My niece at the time was probably, let me think, that was 2 years ago. She's 20. She was 25.
Okay. How did she respond? Did she see this creature as well, or was it just you?
No. She was in the passenger seat. I was turning right. I was looking in the rearview mirror. She just sat there. Well, I mean, the hesitation of 3.5 seconds turning out didn't get her attention, like what's going on. And I'm sorry, but I was not going to take my attention off of that animal, even to tell her, turn around and look. It would have been over, and I would have missed something. So I was very selfish, and I just stared at it without telling her. But as soon as I stopped, you know, as I didn't see him anymore, I started thanking God and the Lord and everybody that might be, in charge for letting me see this thing. I was just fulsomely going over, you know, thank you, God. And my poor niece, she's heard me curse trying to get the darn window up. She'd never heard me do that. And now I'm acting like I'm in a holy roller, you know. So she says, Aunt Susan, what has happened? Did you see the Virgin Mary? And I said, I just saw one. And then she understood. So no, she didn't see it. I regret that.
Now, the pastor, did you say it was a pastor, reverend?
Yeah, somewhere down the road. Yeah, that's what we call him, the preacher.
The preacher. Okay. You said the preacher was aware of it. That's why he lit up his property so well. Was he the one that kind of clued you in on this being a hotbed?
No.
All right.
Gene's report to the organization I was participating in, no. Mm-hmm. We don't ever talk to them about it because it's sort of like there's still this onus of you're crazy. I don't want to hear about this. People, even in the woods, you know, when they might hear the sounds, they just say, oh, I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. If you actually say, I think there's a Bigfoot out there, they say you're crazy. So we don't talk to people about this. Even the person on whose property these animals reside, he has asked us before point blank, is there something funny going on here with some kind of animal? And I'm not going to answer for Gene, you know. So I leave it to Gene, and she says, oh, no. So to this day, he still doesn't. I think he must know by now. But we don't talk about it.
Yep. Hey, Tim.
Yep.
Did you hear that?
What's that?
Did you hear that?
Hear what?
Is it a Bigfoot, Tim? Maybe it's digestive troubles.
It could be.
Maybe it's weight gain, low energy, achy joints. If you've been struggling with any of these, Dr. Stephen Gundry says you're not alone, and he knows the real cause. Dr. Gundry is one of the most famous and well-respected diet experts in the world, and he says that most of these problems aren't about lack of exercise or even genetics. The real cause is leaky gut. Leaky gut happens when you eat certain foods that contain lectins, which are little tiny particles that tear holes in your digestive tract. These particles, then they wreak havoc on your insides. They cause poor digestion, fatigue, achy joints and muscles, brain fog, and even worse, health issues. So what's the solution? Well, you just need to know a few foods to avoid. And Dr. Gundry has made a free video describing exactly what they are. And that's Tim's favorite price. Free. You can check out Dr. Gundry's free video. People who watch the video have reported more energy, smoother bowel movements, slimmer waistlines, and a stronger, healthier body. If you want to tackle that leaky gut finally, just watch the video at TotalRestore2.com. That's TotalRestore2. That's the number 2.com. TotalRestore2.com. Get your life back. Tim and I are. We've been working with Dr. Gundry, and I think it's going to make a huge difference in your life. So go check it out. TotalRestore2. That's the number 2.com. TotalRestore2.com. Watch the video now. Educate yourself. Enlighten yourself. And start on a path of a whole new life. See, Tim, it wasn't that Bigfoot was skinny or malnourished. I think he watched the video that Dr. Gundry put out.
Oh, that could be.
And he's just avoided lectins. He's having smoother bowel movements, slimmer waistline, and a stronger, healthier body that allows him to almost glide.
That's right.
Well, at least that's what Susan Barron's telling us about. All right, so Susan, since you started investigating and reading over, poring over these files, to that moment, what are we talking? A week, 6 weeks, 2 years? How long from the get-go of you actually investigating these claims to seeing a Bigfoot did it take you?
12 years.
Oh, really? 12 years. Okay, good. Yeah. Well, then that makes me feel that you're not as crazy as Tim thinks you are. Because if it was that you immediately picked up a file, drove out there and started seeing Bigfoot, you know, that would make us start questioning. But it took you 12 years to actually have an experience. So in that 12 years, I have to ask you, what keeps you going? What makes you continue to push and look for these sightings? I mean, if I drive more than 4 blocks and can't find a Big Mac or a Burger King, I just go back home because I think they probably don't really exist. You're going at it for 12 years with no real hard evidence that this exists. What's your drive?
Well, if you call a sighting hard evidence, then yeah, I didn't have any, but I did have a lot of what I consider to be hard evidence, which were good footprints, not just impressions, but good footprints. I found scat once that I was convinced, but there's no way to prove that, you know, that I felt was that.
You're wrong. It's in the taste. It's all about the taste, right, Tim? He learned the hard way.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you guys are pros.
College hazing, yeah. I'm telling you, it was horrible.
Yeah.
Well, I kept it in my freezer for, I don't know, 6 months. And every time I opened the freezer, I imagined or the smell was permeating that the plastics. I had like 5 layers of plastic over it. So I finally had to throw it out. It had a musty. It smelled like mold and must is what it smelled like. It was really weird.
Bigfoot's in the bushes and he watches this woman come over and pick up his poop. And he's like, what the hell is wrong with this lady?
That had to make your frozen.
Well, what's happening?
Does she know where that came from?
That had to make your frozen pizzas taste wonderful.
I really got upset by it finally and said I can't live with that, so I got rid of it. But I did have evidence. But I think the most convincing was the vocal evidence, which happened as if they were putting on a show for Jean and me the first night I spent down there with her listening. I have heard about calls they make, like the siren call. I heard that. I just thought, well, these people are crazy. It's not, what would it do that for? I heard it up and down several
now,
times.
Wait a minute.
I heard the falling call.
You've just made every Little Mermaid fan stand up and listen when you say the siren call. So it's not that Bigfoot's out there going, oh. What are you saying the siren call is? No, what is the siren call? Can you give us your best impersonation of that?
Yeah, I will. I'm taking the phone away for a sec. Oh, just that, but better. Sounds better. But the one I heard.
Go ahead and try it again, then. Let me hear your best siren call. Come on, give it all you got. Come on, Susan.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's about as good as I'm going to do, I guess.
So it's like he's on a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And it's beautiful and it's clear. The one I heard the most was just, falling calls like that. Like after the train came through, when I'd be out there by myself, the train came through about 3 a.m., I'd hear him like he was regaining his dominance over his territory. He'd make this loud, like that. So it was great. But more than that, I heard, oh my God, there were three of them talking to each other, I guess, and these calls must mean something. But there were two across in the forest, way back in the forest, one east, one west. And then in the back, maybe 300, 400 yards behind us, there was one. And one of the most interesting things that happened was a tiny high call. Oh, oh, oh. And I said, boy, this thing's going to do this for a while. So I counted them. 16 times this little thing called. And then there was this magnificent, incredible, what I call a huff grunt. And the thing, the little call stopped. You know, Mama or Papa put the kibosh on that. So, and there was another thing they did that was stunning, or one did. Came right up. I couldn't have been more than 50 feet from us, but it's black. I'm telling you, it's black out there at Jean's. And so we can't see it, but he starts doing what I call a mumbly grumbling. And he's going like this. And I'm thinking, what is going on here? Sounded like he was just upset with himself or trying to convince himself that what he was doing was really okay, talking to us or something. So many calls that night. I haven't even, a growl. I heard the growl that night. Now, that is magnificent. I hope you get to hear it in your lifetime.
Well, go ahead and do it. Let me hear what a growl sounds like.
Okay, now it's very, the pitch is lower than any human bass singer can go. I'm just telling you. It's
even the guy from the Oak Ridge Boys who goes, giddy up, boom, ba, boom, ba, ba, ma,
ma. Oh, boy, you can almost go that deep. That sounds pretty deep to me, but I was struck by the fact that it couldn't be human, so I think it was probably deeper, if you can imagine. But he was a dog was bothering him, or we would have been out of there, you know, if he was doing this to us, it would have been horrible. But he was doing it to this little dog who was so brave. He'd bark, rah, 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 and then the Bigfoot would growl. Okay, so it's very deep, very low frequency, low pitch. I felt like I could grab the sound waves. They were so thick and heavy, huge lungs, and it's a velvety, but beautiful.
I think
beautiful.
I just found myself strangely aroused. Could you do that again?
Crazy. Now, I wish I could do it for you. And
that was pretty good. Yeah, if I heard that in the woods, I would kneecap Tim and leave him behind and run.
Absolutely. And that's the reason that he does it. You know, this is a warning, and just don't come closer. Now, I did have a rock thrown talking about warnings. These are the special things that have happened to me. I intruded into his territory. I just happened to know where it is, all right, just after all these years. So I went over where he kind of lives. He doesn't like that, I don't think. Well, yeah, no, he doesn't. So I put down my plastic tablecloth, and I don't think I said anything then. I put down the plastic tablecloth, and then I heard a rock throw. Now, it must have been a large rock, and it hit a rock face, because the dang thing just exploded with this incredible sound. Crack! And this thing blew up. And I knew to expect that. First, he throws rocks at you. You've heard that from all the reports, you know, and all these people that go out squatching, you know, they do the calls, they throw out the calls, the reports.
That was very judgy. That was very judgy sounding, Susan. All squatchy. You don't like that term?
No, don't like it. Anyway, yeah, I don't like when they call him that. And I don't like their methods, but that's not none of my business. Not none. Listen to me. That's not any of my business. That's their way of approaching him, and I haven't seen that it has worked yet.
You were an English teacher?
Yeah, I said not none.
Not none. Everybody knows it's none not. Good God, learn something, would you?
I'm Alabamian, you know.
I'm sorry, that is proper Alabama English.
Yes,
I forgot.
Yes, it's proper. Right. You know, as many negatives as you can get in work.
Y'all ain't kidding, that's sure.
That's for sure. But when I had to go get the food,
uh-huh.
and he had already thrown the rock. The next thing is a charge, and I did not want it to get like that. That would not be good. So I sloshed my way, 90 as fast as my old body can go, back to the car, started throwing cans in the, you know, the stuff I was going to put out in my backpack, and it was falling everywhere. It was the biggest, I wish I had a video of me. So then I go back and I throw the stuff down, and I was talking to him the whole time because I know he knows my voice. So I'm saying, it's okay, it's okay, it's just me, I'm just putting food out for you, just please, please, no charge. Everything's fine, everything's okay here, and I didn't get another rock throw. And when I got to the car, very bravely, I hollered out, food, and jumped in the car and took off. So that was kind of an exciting. He didn't touch it. He's not stupid. He didn't touch the food.
Well, why wouldn't he touch the food?
Well, now,
afraid that you tainted it or no?
No, nothing like that, because he has eaten the food I put out before. But he's not going to walk into a setup. You know, for all he knows, I might be deciding that night that I've decided I want a body. Like, you know, the people that I'm kind of a no-kill person. I think we can figure this out without killing one. But he's very aware that humans have variable temperaments. And one might bring a shotgun and blow him away, which I think is naive of people to think, because he runs faster than a deer. I mean, he runs, he hides, he's smart, he's, I don't know how smart he is.
Everything you're looking for in a man.
Everything. All everything. Right. If his face, I mean, that's the fear I have. I have not seen a face yet, except from a distance. I saw the second one. I did see two, and the second one was charming. But at such a distance, and he was so dark, his face was so dark, like you were describing yours. I couldn't distinguish the features except for his eyes, which had the pink orangutan baby thing around them. Can you imagine a baby orangutan with pink flesh around the eyes?
I do every night.
I hope your wife doesn't hear that.
She doesn't judge.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad. But anyway, that was the only thing I saw in that one's face. Now, that sort of worries me, my reaction to seeing his face. If I can get my nerve up to just hold on and say sweet, loving things to him as he approaches me so that I'm so non-threatening, I still think I might freak when I see his face, because it's not an ape face, necessarily, and it's not a human face. You know, they've done some DNA work. And even though everybody trashed Melba Ketchum's thing that she did of her own collection, Josh Gates from Expedition Unknown took some Yeti hair to her, and she found the same thing. Half human, half ape. The human being the female because of the mitochondrial DNA. The male being an ape. Now, figure that out.
Mm.
So, you know, 13,000, 15,000 years ago, maybe it was the thing to do, you know, I don't know. So maybe that was fun.
At closing time, it's still the thing to do. We have to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Susan Barron. But before then, let's do a throwback to one of our favorite Bigfoot encounter, Theater of the Mind. Sit back, relax, turn down the lights, turn up your radio, and enjoy this classic Theater of the Mind.
Battle of Bigfoot. A personal encounter shared by a listener that wishes to remain anonymous. I awoke with a start. The normal tranquil silence that I enjoyed at my hunting cabin was shattered with a sound that still haunts me to this day. It sounded like a large bear and something else fighting for its life somewhere off in the distance. I sprang out of bed, my room barely lit with the soft, muted colors of early morning, threw on my pants, quickly slipped my feet into my boots, and without lacing them, I grabbed my shotgun and headed outside to see what all the commotion was. I had been visiting this cabin in these woods for years and had never heard something like this before. I ran towards the sound of the attack, the sounds of twigs and branches snapping as I made my way through the woods, huffing and puffing. I was quickly reminded how out of shape I had gotten. Then, there opened a small clearing ahead, and what I saw was unimaginable. I refused to even tell my friends this story because I know how insane it sounds, but I also know what I saw that day. Locked in mortal battle was one of the largest black bears I'd ever seen, and it was being mauled by something even larger, something horrifying. There was a battle royale unfolding before my unbelieving eyes. A black bear and Bigfoot entrenched in a knockdown, drag-em-out fight to the finish. The sound at this point was deafening. The bear's growls and howls reached epic proportions. The beast it grappled with howling and grunting so loud as it tried to keep its arms and hands clear of the bear's angry jaws. I wondered what would cause this to happen, and I saw my answer. Not 10 feet away from me, a small bear cub cowering as its mother fought valiantly to protect her child. The Bigfoot creature must have caught them by surprise and come between mama and baby, prompting an all-out war. I watched in utter horror. It was like every B-grade movie I watched growing up. This would be the closest to King Kong versus Godzilla I would ever witness in person. The bear howled as it struggled against Bigfoot's grasp. The giant creature opened its mouth and clamped down on the bear's neck as it held the bear from behind. The bear cried out in agony as the Sasquatch struggled to keep the upper hand on its foe. In a surprise move, the bear threw itself forward into an awkward somersault, which sent the behemoth behind him flying forward and smashing to the ground with a thunderous crash. The bear took advantage of the stunned adversary and sprung into action, leaping on the head and shoulders of Bigfoot and its entire 800-pound frame, growling this strange, sustained, burping Wookiee noise. It pounced repeatedly up and down on the Sasquatch, looking like it was trying to break its back. The creature bellowed again in agonizing pain and pushed hard against the ground to try to right itself between pounces from one ornery, smoky bear. Then, the worst possible thing happened. The baby bear let out a series of cries, and Mama stopped her attack and turned. That's when she saw me. Within 10 feet of her bear cub, she lowered her head and began to charge. I lifted my shotgun and fired a round into the sky with the hopes that this would scare Mama and baby off. The bear was not deterred and kept its rampage towards my direction. That's when the Bigfoot sprang up and jumped on the back of the moving bear and with all its might pulled back on the beast's head. And then I heard a sickening, muted crack, like a large wet limb from a tree popping, and the bear collapsed. I was still a good 40 yards or so away as I watched the Bigfoot rain down hammering blows to the back of the bear to finish it off. I slowly backed up and watched in amazement. The little bear let out with a whelping noise, and the Sasquatch turned its attention to our direction, and it looked mad. Well, that's all I had to see. I took off running back to the cabin as fast as I could, wishing I would have laced the damn boots I was wearing, especially as I tried to hurdle some debris of logs and branches, and the loopy laces caught one and sent me crashing to the ground. I literally ran out of my boots in pursuit of safety. I got in, slammed the door, and locked it. I could hear the cries and screams of the young cub as it met its untimely demise at the hands of a very irritable Bigfoot. I stayed in my cabin the rest of the day and decided it was safer to stay inside. Then, I planned to venture back out the next day. I would plan a return to the site of the battlegrounds and take some pictures as I knew my friends would never believe me without them. That night, I barely slept, as I kept hearing the sound of loud thumping and grunting from outside. At one point, I heard glass shattering, followed by loud whoops and bellows. When morning finally broke, I peeked out of the cabin window to see my car, and it was in rough shape. Something had been pounding huge dents into the hood and roof, and thrown a massive rock through my windshield. I decided against returning to the spot I saw the fight take place, and reevaluated the fact that maybe that was Bigfoot territory, and the bears entered his space, and that may be what led to the attack. All I know is this thing did not want me there either, so I loaded up the car, and I got the hell out of there. It's been about 5 years now. I never returned, but I do look online to see if there have been any Bigfoot encounters in the area. There have been a few reported sightings, mostly fleeting, but nothing like what I witnessed. I often lay awake replaying the events of that early morning and realize just how lucky I was to have not been the original target of a rampaging Bigfoot, and utterly frightened and in awe of the raw power it displayed in wrestling and killing an 8-foot, 800-pound black bear.
Hey, this is Jordan Harbinger. Did you know you can be entertained and actually get a boost in your life at the same time? On this show, we dig into the superpowers of the world's most interesting thinkers and top talents. Then we deliver them to you right into your ears. But I get it. We're not all superheroes. That's why we give you their blueprint so you can live what you listen. After 1,000 interviews, learning 5 languages, and getting arrested in a country that doesn't even exist anymore, I'm now more ready than ever to introduce you to the Jordan Harbinger Show. Listen free to The Jordan Harbinger Show, available on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app.
Beyond the darkness.
Hello and welcome. This is a very serious episode of Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. We're talking with our guest, Susan Barron, who is a former science and English teacher from Alabama. So give her a little slack, Tim. A little slack.
I will, Dave. I'll go easy on her.
Yep. Her Yeti calls are alluring, and I think she should make a recording. Put some like Yanni music in the background, Tim, and then some of her in the foreground.
I was thinking more Kenny G, but yeah.
Kenny G. What are we trying to do? Turn on the Sasquatch generation?
Oh, yeah. A little sultry Kenny G and some Yeti calls. I can see it now. Yeah.
She's written a book called Footnotes, Experiences with Sasquatch 2004 to 2018. At least these are the stories she's willing to share in book form. You can get it online. We've got a link to that book in today's podcast. So if you're listening, just go to the podcast information and you'll be able to find the book and check it out for yourself. And we're having a good time. It's a shame Susan's so uptight and doesn't know how to have a good time and laugh with us. Well, hopefully she'll loosen up more in the second segment.
Oh, yeah.
I love that you're having fun with this, Susan. You know, we do the show. It's always so serious. It's nice to be able to relax and enjoy it with somebody who's able to laugh at the concepts of all of this as well, but is so passionate, and we appreciate that. You've been exploring and looking into Sasquatch for around 16 years now?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you're 16 years in, and it took you 12 years to finally have an experience. Once you kind of opened that Pandora's box, how often have you had experiences now in the last 4 years since that very first sighting?
Now, when you say experiences, do you mean my seeing one?
Seeing one, going home with one? I don't know. I'm not here to ask
you, Joe. Okay. Well, I have sort of continuous experiences in the sense of vocals and finding footprints and matching footprints up in different places. You know, they're the same, and that was fun. I did see my second one, and that is what's going to throw everybody. Everybody's going to say, oh, I can't wait for him to say it because I'm a new woman now. I don't let them bother me. They're going to say, oh, she's a liar. Boy, that woman lies. That's fine. Bring it on.
Don't worry about it. They've been saying that since the minute we introduced you, Susan. So go ahead and share the story anyway.
Oh, you mean I've already crossed the line. Okay. I gotcha. Okay. Well, this one was just... This was the most fantastic experience, I guess, other than the birth of my son, that I've had. It was getting dark, and I told you, you know, that's when they come out. So it was getting dark, but I wasn't expecting anything. I never do, just hoping. And, but I had to TT. Excuse me, that's Alabama for urinate. So I opened the door, It was getting so dark that I knew that if I didn't go right then, I wouldn't go, because I do not walk in those woods in the dark, because there are so many snakes. This opens up a whole can of worms. We won't even go there. But black panthers have been spotted in that area. Actually, I think it's a leopard that's in a melanistic phase, and it's just migrated up from Texas and Mexico. But anyway, there was a. There's also a jaguarundi, which is kind of a big cat. I don't want to run into them, so I put my foot out, pivoted, faced the back of the car. I had my hands on my britches, and something caught my eye. It was the most endearing pose of any creature other than a three-year-old child that I've ever seen. He was bent at the waist to the right, and then his head was cocked to the right, or it was his left, okay? And he was looking at me like, what in the world is that? Like he'd seen a UFO or something. And I stared at him. I was, once again, I'm concentrating, you know. And our eyes met. He looked in my eyes and I looked in his. And he recoiled physically from me. He brings one arm up against his chest and he hollers out, "Oof!" And he pivots on his right foot and he tears off into the woods.
Well, sure, you were peeing in his living room.
I was marking his territory.
What?
That's nasty. So, but his legs, his knees were almost parallel to his chest. Have you ever seen a man do that? I mean, that's crazy. When he ran, his knee came almost all the way. It almost touched his
chest. So he was high-stepping. Okay.
He was high-stepping. He took off. But that was beautiful. He was sweet. I mean, I had no qualms if he walked up to me. If that little thing, he was about 5'9", I guess. If he walked up to me, I would have had no fear. Now, that's what I mean about these grown-up ones. I don't know, you know, about them. But this thing was innocent.
And it sees you. And that's the most prone moment, right? If there's any time, I tell the ghosts in my house, you can communicate with me at any time except when I'm in the bathroom, because that's like the last moment you want to have any kind of encounter. And especially you're in a prone squatted position when a large hairy bipedal creature walks up on you. Talk about performance anxiety, Tim. I have a hard time peeing at the baseball game knowing there's a guy standing 2 feet from me at the same urinal. She's out there tittering away in the front yard of Sasquatch, and he's just watching, thinking, what the hell is wrong with you? No wonder we don't talk to people. They're idiots. Look at them. They're peeing in our yard.
You would think that would be the time where you'd want to be ready to go is when you want to be. Yeah.
Shakes his head in righteous indignation and walks off into the woods cursing.
What is it? Polluting my environment.
Stupid people.
Right there in the old living room.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So you have this, but the whole time, I mean, are you, be honest now, were you continuing to, you know, do what you were doing?
No, I did not even squat. I just had my hands on my britches ready to pull them down when I looked, and there he was.
Okay. And so you were about ready to go.
About ready to, but okay. I didn't, because I wanted back in the car. I mean, I know I said that I wouldn't have been afraid of him if he came forward. I think that's true. But anyway, I was back in the car light speed, and I didn't want to get out. It took me 40, I timed it. It took me 40 minutes for my heart to get back to a normal beat. It was pounding.
Okay.
It was great. Talk about cocaine. It's better than cocaine. I've never tried it, but, you know.
Oh, look at her backpedal. It's better than cocaine. I mean, I've never tried it, but I've heard. But this is the woman who said she could almost feel the notes earlier, Tim. So no cocaine, but LSD probably.
Well, nothing wrong with a few shrooms here and there, you know.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. All right.
Is that what happens with LSD, that people can feel the notes with their hands?
They can touch. Yeah, they can touch music and see colors or smell colors. Yes.
Well,
I've been told that's what Tim tells me all the time.
No, I see.
So you see this. Was that how many encounters like that have you had? I mean, not where you're peeing in their yard, but I mean, how many encounters have you had where you've seen a Bigfoot?
That's it. Two.
Well, mm-hmm. That second one is embarrassing. It'll probably take a while before they're going to warm up to you again.
Yeah, that might be.
And
I don't know whether they seem fascinated with us, but I'm not sure.
Have they been aggressive in that area to any of the people?
I hate to tell you this. Well, yes. Jean, my friend down there, at whose house all this transpires, or near her house, they were terrifying her because she wanted to get to know them. She was fascinating with it, but they became terribly intrusive and were right at her house watching her on the computer. That seemed to be their favorite pastime. So she finally started closing the blinds and drawing the curtains and all that, and she was practically living in a cave, and she wouldn't go out of the house. That's when she called for help. And one time, before she drew everything shut, she can smell them. They have now, lots of people say they smell like garbage or dead something or whatever, skunky, whatever. I smelled plastic burning, almost burning. I mean, it was a clean kind of smell, but it was very pungent. You know, like, anyway, I smelled him once like that. Well, she could smell him when he was right up next to her house. So one night, she has the lights off because it's in the middle of the night and her husband is sleeping. Well, she has her days and nights mixed up. Excuse me. So, but she left the lights off and got up and crept around the room real quietly and flipped the lights on the front porch and came out at the same time to see what was there. And I think it was one that I saw because the color was the same. It was gray with light brown kind of mixed in. I called it taupe. She said this gray one, like a frog, leaped out immediately of her view. She did say the eye shine, the reflection was golden yellow. So she has seen them, glimpses of them. She said, now I want a 3-second one like you've got. She's kind of irritated, I think, that I've seen one for 3 seconds. But she has had many, many, I don't remember your original question, but she's had lots of things happen around.
That's what cocaine will do to you.
Yeah, it does. It's just wiped my mind out. Yeah.
So once you've had that experience, though, and I had asked about the aggression factor. Yeah, then please.
Okay, here's what happened. She had decided to cut off communication with them, shut all of her drapes and everything, and she didn't talk to them or call them up anymore. She would call them up with a whoop, whoop, and they would come running up and talk to her, whoop back at her and stuff like that. So she stopped that, and I think they were angry. I think one of them is a little borderline. Okay, that's the one that was walking up to the car when my niece and I were in the car. I think this one is something might be a little bit off with him. He may be a little too friendly with humans. I'm not sure. But anyway, he got mad, and she was out. Her family had gone to church. She was out alone, and she heard something whiz through the branches. And the next thing she knew, her arm had been stung by a sweet gum ball. Now, sweet gum is a kind of a tree, and it has these kind of thorny-looking balls that are the seed pods. And if you step on them, it hurts. So this one had aged for about a year, and that thing gave her a wallop from maybe 50 or 60 feet with that header at that with a sweet gum ball, and it swelled, and it was there over an hour later when her family came home. So the thing did get mad at her. Well, she goes up. She lost her temper, and she went toward the thing. She couldn't see him, but she said, "How dare you hit me? And I've been nice to you all these years," and blah, blah, blah. And this thing started seething, she said. I said, "What do you mean?" She said he was putting his air through his teeth like, and he was throwing things and stomping back there behind the fence, back in the woods behind her house. And she said at that point she retreated to the house. But that didn't even offer her protection. Now, this is not the same time. This is another event at another time. She was at home. Her husband was working second shift. So she was at home. It was, I don't know, 10 or something like that. And she heard the back door open. And she thought that her husband, Robert, was coming home early sick or something. So she goes through the house and she says, Robert? And she got to the door. Well, the door was still locked, but had been pulled through the strike plate, and it was wide open. Now, I saw the aluminum strike plate pulled out at a right angle, and it was, you know, it was dangerous because it would tear your skin if you touched it, so I broke it off. I actually saw that. The thing had didn't understand doorknobs or whatever and pulled the locked door open through the strike plate. Now, that was impressive.
Well, you say, you know, I'm listening. Your version of impressive is scary as hell to me because it's like, you know, that had to shake the safety feeling for this family, especially after years of having been around this, now to realize that it could, like a human, flip a switch anytime and just kind of really get mad. Right.
Well, that's what I said to her. I said, Jean, you don't seem upset. I said, what is the matter with you? You know, I would be freaking. But she said, there is not a thing I can do about this. She was completely resigned. And I guess she realized that they aren't brave enough to meet her face to face. I really don't. Well, they don't have a problem with bravery, I don't think. It's maybe not wise to them to meet her face to face. He may have thought he could just go in and look around that she wasn't there. I really, you know, it'd be interesting to know what they think. I'd love to talk to them. And I think that I could if I had long enough with them to teach them some words, you know. Hopefully they could associate meaning with words, like Coco the gorilla.
A lot of people say that these beings seem to be able to communicate via telepathy. Have you ever felt, in any of these situations, have you ever felt like you were having maybe thoughts that were not your own, like something was trying to communicate with you?
No, but I'm not very open to that sort of stuff. You know, I've communicated with a ghost, but only in a supervised situation where I held dowsing rods and I was near a ghost, and I knew I was because I was in the cellar of a house in Gettysburg. But I wasn't aware of that thing at all until the dowsing rods started going nuts. So I'm not open. The thing was sitting right near me, the ghost, and I didn't even have the least bit of reaction. So I'm not tuned into that, and I don't disbelieve it. Let me just say this. If that thing stood before me and he suddenly disappeared, like they say, you know, cloaks or, you know, he turns into some other kind of energy, I wouldn't be terribly shocked. I believe that he's probably just flesh and blood and sort of appeared on this planet, but a lot of that doesn't make sense to me, so I'm open. And I do think people might sense things from these creatures, but I'm not buying into it wholeheartedly. I mean, I'd have to feel it or see it myself.
All right. I mean, I guess that's fair enough. But with the amount of activity in this one specific area, do you have any idea? And have you checked the archives of the news? Has this been something that's gone on for generations?
Might have been, but nobody would talk about it. They might have been there for generations. I have seen a baby footprint. Now, this is big news. I haven't written about this or told but one person. And just see what you're getting out of me in this interview. I saw a baby footprint that, so they're reproducing. It was almost round, but it was still oval. And it had four little bumps for toes at the toe end and then sort of faded out. And it looked like a little elephant. Like a tiny elephant footprint. Of course, I botched the whole thing. The camera had water in it, and I poured too much water in my plaster, and it was raining, pouring rain, so I didn't get that one. But I saw it. But, you know, that's a matter of belief for people. I have no documentation. But, yeah, they're reproducing. And so there are generations of Bigfoot, and, you know, I presume that I interviewed a guy from up here in Huntsville on Green Mountain, and he said the thing had been around on Green Mountain for ages, that his grandparents had had experiences with it. His mother had experience with the thing coming to the window at the cabin and looking in. He was an old dude. And the mother would look up from doing the dishes at the window, and there would be this thing tapping on the window with her hand or his hand, whatever. Of course, it'd freak him out. But, yeah, I think they've been around for generations in places. Mm. Absolutely.
60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? You can get an offer for your car with True Car. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, pee in Bigfoot's yard, or just listen to my voice, you can get a True Cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or at home. Just go to True Car and simply enter your license plate. And then watch how your car details pop up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate True Cash offer from a local True Car certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in. They're going to check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need. So there's never any surprises. Then simply leave with your check. So or trade in your car for a new ride. That might even be better. When you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. Susan Barron, our guest. Footnotes is the name of the book. Again, that link is in today's podcast program, so you can find that easily. Susan, you're talking about all of these different sightings in this area. Can you give me a geographical context? I mean, is this within a 50 square mile area, 20 square mile area, 100 square mile area? And how often are reports coming in?
Well, no reports come in from the exact place where I've done the research, if you can call it research. I would say the area that she and I explore and that I go into would be maybe 10 acres. That's all I need because I'm where they are. Apparently, they might meet there at this stream. You know, I really don't understand that because the other night, the last thing I've documented about them were they were cutting up down there when Gene and I came in. So they're there.
All right. Now, for the rest of the United States that doesn't understand cutting up, can you explain that? That is a terminology that I've heard a lot in the South, but most of our other friends don't know what that means.
Okay. Here's the translation.
Thank you.
When they will talk to each other or make sounds to each other, and the other night I heard a new one, actually. We had been all over the back roads. We had been way back to the stream where we think he takes a bath. I don't know if he does that, but he cools off and drinks from it. And we finally came back home, and as we're going up the front steps, Gene lets off a whoop, and as I was moving up the steps, part of the first whoop I didn't hear. I heard a tail end of the first whoop, and then I heard this. I'm taking my, phone away a little bit now. This crazy monkey sound, and then another whoop. So they were down there having an argument or something. I'd never heard that cat, cat, cat thing.
You said you weren't sure why they would be down there by the water. That would make the most sense to me. Everything needs water, right?
Oh, absolutely. I believe some people have really gotten it right about the streams, that they follow the streams, and they may follow the streams to, I guess, the males. If they follow a typical anthropoid sort of pattern, they're going to be thrown out of the family group or at least the male is at a certain age because of the gene pool. Now, this is just instinctive. They're not sitting there talking about the gene pool, obviously, but I don't know, maybe they are. But so they throw these people, these little guys out, and they have to travel to mate so that the gene pool stays varied. And I believe now you were talking about who else is reported there. Well, if you include the Talladega Forest, which is where I am, sort of near the border of it, there are many reports that come from the Talladega Forest, from the Chiha area, the highest point in Alabama. There's several reports just from one site that I know of where campers and that sort of thing have heard them and have been maybe one of those typical camping experiences where the animal will come up and peer into the tent. You know, he's curious. And you see, these things don't get to see humans too much. It might be about the same amount of time that we see them, or maybe a little more if they want to. But they're fascinated by us and want to know more. I fully believe that the one that tried to come into the house is just so dadgum curious about what we do that they want to know what's in that house, what's in that place. I want to know what they're doing in there. And, of course, when he sees a screen and pictures on a screen, you know, that's just beyond, beyond. I mean, that would be just utterly fascinating, I would think, to these animals. They're very smart. I don't know how smart.
Have you ever gone, well, pretty smart if they're able to avoid, you know, and evade humanity for so long and not be killed or caught.
Exactly.
They've got to be pretty intelligent. But have you ever thought of playing music or doing something to try to engage, bring them in?
You know, Jane, excuse me, I didn't say that. Jane put on music the other night, and it was loud rock music. That was the when I heard the cack, cack, cack later. We were out way back at the stream, and she put on loud rock music from my car. And I said, are they going to like that? She said, they love music. So she's done something with it. I think I will. I think I will do that the next time I sit out. I'm going to put some music on. Because I think they are just so, so interested in us. I think, you know, in a way, trying to figure out where they came from and what they're doing and how they get here and why are they different colors, for crying out loud. Usually a species is all the same color, right? I just don't understand all of this, but they may have very well followed us.
Well, not all species. I mean, listen, there's multiple versions of bears, multiple versions of apes, and their colors can vary as well.
Now, what are you talking about? You're talking about, but one bear, if you look at a grizzly bear, they're all going to have the same colors, right?
Right, but in the genus of the bear to begin with, I mean, there's different branches. I would think that might be part of what happens in Sasquatch, especially if they're living and growing in different areas, and then they are kind of cross-pollinating, like you said, so that their gene pool continues. You know, they send young Timmy Bigfoot out into the woods when he hits 13 to go find himself a girlfriend, and he has to go, you know, traverse the property till he finds a new pod. You know, he might be mixing, you know, his brown fur with, you know, more of a gray fur. And then they come out with, you know, kind of a checkered fur. You know, I mean, it could just be that that's how this all breaks down.
And it could be. I mean, that could be the answer. But I do have a sense that they've been around us for eons. I'm not talking just a little bit of time. They've been around us for a long, long time. Well, you know, the Indians have a record of them. I don't know how far back, what, 1,000 years, 800 years? The Indians know that they were around. And now the Indians seem to believe that they can do these disappearing things, you know, that they can disappear in front of their eyes. They can hypnotize you. And I have read that the low frequency sound can disorient us and make us sort of lose time and space if we're bombarded by a very low frequency for a while. And that may be something. No, it's, isn't it interesting though? I mean, how could people not be fascinated with this animal?
I think they are.
Some people just, even the ones though that put you down, I think they're still fascinated. Yeah,
right.
They probably
it
are.
Just doesn't fit their paradigm. I'm sure they'd all like to have that encounter anyway. Susan, it's been such a pleasure chatting with you, and we've got a link up for your book on today's program. Thank you so much for coming forward and sharing your story.
Oh, you mean we have to say goodbye now?
Well, you know, we don't have to, but then it's going to get awkward and weird at the end of the night. I'd love to have you back, and we could chat more, and maybe if you'd like to bring your friend with you. Oh, while you're done with us. Okay, I see how you are. No, if you want to bring one of your friends that have had these experiences, maybe we can meet up again in the future on the show and have a chance to talk about it.
Jane would love to talk to you. I'll get back in touch with you when I get permission from her. You know, because I don't want to step on her toes, you know.
Thank you so much
for putting my book out there. I appreciate this, and I have thoroughly enjoyed this interview. Thank you so much, both of you.
Thank you so much. Thank you all for tuning in and making us part of your world. We'll be back again with you Tuesday with the best in true crime talk radio. You're going to want to tune in and check that out. And then we'll be back next weekend with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. You've been listening to Beyond the Darkness.
COTA just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your COTA fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with COTA. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.